Now, friends, as we come to this little book of Habakkuk, and I dare say that this is a little book that you haven't heard many sermons from it. I began preaching on it about, I suppose, somewhere around 35 years ago. And I used to ask congregations if they'd ever heard a sermon on Habakkuk. When I first started out, no one had ever heard a sermon on Habakkuk. But I find today that there are many preachers that have found their way to this little book. And it's one of the many of these so-called minor prophets, but every one of them is a major leaguer, as we found out. Now, we've put together here Nahum, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah. And they have a great deal in common. Each one will give a different facet of the dealing of God with mankind, both in the way that the government of God is, as it were, integrated into the government of man, and also God's dealings with the individual. So that is one of the important things about putting these three little books together. Another way in which they are quite similar, actually, they all come from approximately the same period. In fact, they could all have been contemporary, and the possibility is that they were. But it's very difficult to nail down to a specific date many of these prophets. In fact, many of the books of the Bible, you can't come up with an exact date always. And the reason is that that's really not the important thing. But obviously, Nahum and Habakkuk and Zephaniah all fit into a period between Josiah and Jehoiakim. And in that same period, you have Jeremiah also. He fits into this period. The northern kingdom had gone into captivity, and the southern kingdom was right on the verge of it. And after Josiah, every king after him was a bad king. In fact, they abused the title of being a bad king. So we have to follow along here by putting these three in the same time capsule, and they apparently belong together. They're rather contemporary. Now Habakkuk, though, is certainly different from the others. He's different from Nahum. Nahum dealt with just one nation, Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire. And God was right in judging them, and not only right, that God was just and righteous and a God of love. And still he could judge them because he is all three. Now Habakkuk approaches this problem from a little different viewpoint. Here's a man that's got problems. And his problem was that he thought that God was doing nothing about the iniquity of his own people. And it disturbed him. He says, why don't you do something? And I'm of the opinion that a great many people feel very much the same way about, well, why doesn't God move in the affairs of men today? Why doesn't God do something about the condition that is in the world today, in our own nation? Why doesn't God move in? Why is he permitting man to get by with so much? Well, we're going to find out that was the problem of Habakkuk. In fact, his problem was multiplied. God answered that question for him and said to him, I'm preparing a nation that's going to come and take this nation into captivity. Unless they change their ways, they'll go into Babylonian captivity, and I'm preparing Babylon. Now, if you think he had a problem before, he's got one now. And the problem is, why will you use Babylon, a nation that's definitely more wicked than your own people, more pagan than your own people, more given to idolatry and to sin than your own people, and you're going to use them to punish your people? God said, yes, that's what I'm going to do. But you see, God says, I'm not through with Babylon. I will judge Babylon then. And this is my method. Now, this man is quite an interesting man that's before us, Habakkuk. He's written a lovely little book here. In fact, there have been many that have had a great deal to say about the literary excellence of the little book. In fact, the last chapter, there are not but three here, but the last chapter, chapter 3, is actually a song or a psalm of praise and adoration to God. And it's actually a very beautiful thing. And the book is very important as far as the New Testament is concerned. Now, I think it's generally conceded that the three great doctrinal books of the New Testament are Romans, Galatians, and Hebrews. And all three of these books in the New Testament, we find that all three quote from Habakkuk. The fact of the matter is that all of them quote from it and make that the background of their message. We'll see that when we get to it. And that verse, by the way, is verse 4 in chapter 2. The just shall live by faith. And that is in the little book of Habakkuk. So this little book looms up on the horizon of Scripture as being very important. And don't let the brevity of it deceive you, because it becomes all important. It's not really how much you say, it's what you say. And so here we see that. Now his name means love's embrace. And did you know that that's about all we know about Habakkuk? That is his personal life. He tells us nothing about himself, and he doesn't even date his book. Now, many of the prophets said they prophesied during the reign of so-and-so, king of Israel or king of Judah. And you can, of course, pinpoint them, but Habakkuk doesn't even help us out that much. Martin Luther, he gave a very striking definition of the name Habakkuk, which means love's embrace. And I'd like for you to hear this. Habakkuk signifies an embracer, or one who embraces another, takes him into his arms. He embraces his people and takes them in his arms. That is, he comforts them and holds them up as one embraces a weeping child, to quiet it with the assurance that if God wills, it shall soon be better. It's a very wonderful quotation, by the way, and reveals something also of the heart of Martin Luther. You can understand why Martin Luther, who had been a monk, why he married. He was a very romantic individual, by the way, and this statement here reveals that. Now, this is all, actually, that's known of the writer, except another thing that we'd like to add ourselves to this, and that is, I call him the Doubting Thomas of the Old Testament. Actually, he had a question mark for a brain. His book is really quite unusual. It's not a prophecy in the strict sense of the term. He's very much like the book of Jonah, in the sense that he gives his own experience. And his experience is that he had a question, and he didn't have the answer for that question. And the answer that he finally got created a bigger question than he had before. He's really a Doubting Thomas. I'd frankly probably should turn that around and say it like this. The Apostle Thomas is the Habakkuk of the New Testament, because the little book of Habakkuk reveals a man that was certainly one with a real hang-up, and he wanted an answer to his questions. He was born in the objective case and in the past pluperfect tense and in the subjunctive mood, and you write over him an interrogation point, That is a question mark. Finally, though, when you come to the last chapter, and especially the last two or three verses, then you can put down an exclamation point. But the little book has over it written a question mark. And that's what the man had for a brain. And the question is why? Why? And I think that you can reduce the doubt of Thomas in the New Testament or Habakkuk in the Old Testament or the question that men have today into one word, why? And I think this is fundamentally the question of the human race. You remember Job, the oldest book that we believe we have in the Scripture. You can write over the entire account there. Why? Why did Job have to suffer? That was his question. And believe me, I think it's your question. And it's mine. We can reduce all questions to the lowest common denominator. And it's basic to all questions. Why? Why didn't God do something about the evil in the land of Israel? Why didn't God begin to judge his people? And that's a question that is sometimes raised today. So you see, it's almost the opposite question from Nahum because God was moving there. And there would be those that raise the question, how can he be a God of love and judge as he did? And here, it's the opposite. Why doesn't God do something about the evil that is in the world? Now, may I say that I believe the closing statement in the little book here, it says, for the chief musician on my stringed instrument. And that reveals, of course, that this is a song. And that was put there for the orchestra leader and for the director of the choir. And this last chapter, as we've said, is a song. It's a psalm. And the entire prophecy is really a gem of beauty. Let me say this relative to what others have said about it, because maybe a moment ago you thought I was waxing eloquent about the beauty of this little book, but it's impressed others. Delitzsch wrote, his language is classical throughout, full of rare and select turns and words. And Morehouse wrote, it is distinguished for its magnificent poetry. Now, this little book, it opens in gloom, it closes in glory. It begins with an interrogation point, and it closes with an exclamation mark. Habakkuk is a big why. Why God permits evil is a question that every thoughtful mind has faced. And I think this book is the answer to the question, will God straighten out the injustice of the world? Well, this book answers the question, is God doing anything about the wrongs of this world today? Well, this book says that he is. And the book is the personal experience of the prophet told in poetry as Jonah was told in prose. Now, the theme of the book is faith. Habakkuk has been called the prophet of faith. And that great statement in 2:4, the just shall live by faith. It's quoted three times in the New Testament. Romans 1:17, Galatians 3:11, Hebrews 10:38. And when we come to it, we'll give an explanation of that. Now, as we get into the little book, I'd like to give you my outline of it that we have in our notes and outline that we send out. In chapter 1, you have the perplexity of the prophet. Now, in chapter 2, you have the perspicuity of the prophet. Now, I could have said the perception of the prophet, but that wouldn't have sounded as big, you know, and as learned as to say the perspicuity of the prophet. But it really is the perception of the prophet. Now, in chapter 3, we have the pleasure of the prophet. Now, this is a remarkable little book, you see, dividing as it does in this way.